the mom.
Yeah.
Could you use Arden to fill out?
Yeah.
Well, I could wish everybody a good morning. It's Tuesday, our regular meeting. I would use this as a point of order to tell you Rick Sanders is absent today. His father had a medical event yesterday that we don't know where it's going to take him, but it doesn't look good now. I would ask that you keep the Sanders family in your thoughts and prayers. And at that point, I'd like you to have us join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody, for taking time to join us. This would be the portion of the meeting that we have a public comment section that we ask anybody in the attendance that wants to speak to us on topics on our agenda. I'd ask that they come up now, and we will give them the forum. Seeing nobody coming up, Darren, we have received bids back on our secondary road buildings, and let's open them, see how we did. Good morning.
Good morning.
Passed out a bid tab sheet for you to follow along with. It looks like we have three bidders.
For people that may not be aware, we are proposing to build a new county sheds in Roland on where the site presently is and west of the city of Kelly. So,
okay, with the first bidder, it would be Jensen Builders, so it would be your third one on the top there. Jensen Builders, we're out of Des Moines, Iowa. And bid bond is signed and attached.
Not a problem. I'm just looking for a good number. I'll take my time if we get to the right place.
It comes down by a second. You just keep playing
here. Okay. I'm seeing a number now. It's hidden. Right there. Okay. Total amount for Jensen Builders will be $1,033,400. So 1033400. Does that bid include? Do we need to?
Yeah. So often we also include. Yeah, we often call that out. Unit prices.
County had estimated this, these two buildings to be $1,235,773, so anything under that is a plus. And so far, so good.
There are two unit prices I'll just read off here. Unit price number one.
Is this for Jensen's again?
Yeah, same bid, Jensen's.
Okay.
15% on overhead and profit, 10% on markup on subcontract provided work, and 5% deduct markup for deduct changes. And then unit price number two is $125 per cubic yard on the over excavation and structural fill. Make note of those. The second bidder is HPC out of Ames, Iowa. and that's Harold Pike.
That's correct.
Is that his first one on your list?
Yes.
Bid bond is signed. Total for Harold Pike Construction is $1,350,000 even. 1,350,000. And on the two unit prices, they had a 15% overhead and profit, 5% markup on subcontractor, and 0% deduct for change orders. And then $40 per cubic yard on the structural shell. And our third and final bidder is Kingland Construction Services out of Forest City, Iowa. Don't believe they're on our list. Use the last empty blank there. Bid bond is attached and signed. Kingland Construction Services is $1,130,000 even. 1,130,000. They have 15% markup on overhead and profit, 7% markup on subcontract work, and 0% for changes. And then $45 per cubic yard on structural fill. So at this time, the apparent low bidder is Jensen Builders. We will run some numbers, double check. By the end of the board meeting, we'll come back and get some recommendations from the board.
Well, once again, Darren, every time that you have put anything out to bid, my recollection is here, it's come in under projection. So I hope I don't change this. We've got two more months to go, but very good.
I do have a couple of questions for you and Chad. Good morning, Chad, by the way. So with these differences about the percentages, do we still go with the base bid, or are you going to do some calculations for the breakouts?
Good question. The way that the instructions to bidder reads is that the selection should be based upon the lowest responsive and responsible bidder based upon the base bid price. So some of these other peripheral things are really more of an accountability thing. So when the contractor gets going and there are changes that happen, there's a basis by which you can calculate the changes. It helps keep everyone just accountable on the same page. But the recommendation is to go with based on the lowest base bid.
Okay. Just through my previous life, once or twice, I saw projects that came in on the lowest bid, except that by the time they were done, they would have been more than the highest bid because of all of these percentages and numbers. Okay, but thank you.
Yep. Good question.
So you'll be bringing this back to us next week, or give me from here, Darren, what are we doing?
We'd like to get a recommendation at this board meeting so we can have the contract on the next week's board agenda.
Well, I would have to say clearly we have Jensen Builders is who we will seek to partner with, so that would be my ask.
Unless still you guys come back and there's something else that you want to tell us to add into the mix.
We'll direct you to do that, and we look forward to what you come out. But you got lucky again, and thank you both. Thank you, Chad.
Thank you.
Very good. Next up, we have Story County Medical Facility here in Nevada has entered into discussions with the board in regards to a potential funding, and we'd like to extend them the opportunity to educate us. So, Nate Thompson, CEO, have a seat. Introduce yourself. After I just did.
My name is Nate Thompson. I serve as the administrator at Story County Medical Center here in Nevada. I really appreciate the opportunity today for some time to go through our facility expansion project that we're still in the middle of but have gotten off the ground with great success. We're very proud of what we put together and excited to see the value that will continue to come to the community. Just a little background for you. You'll remember that the hospital portion of our campus opened back in 2009, and since then we've been working toward that which we broke ground on in October of 2015. So this has been a couple years in the making, specific to this project, but a long-term vision for the facility master plan that we now have at South Campus. The original facility was hospital-based services in regard to surgery, the hospital beds, the diagnostics, the emergency room, and so forth. And then just here back in February, we opened an outpatient expansion whereby the Nevada Clinic, along with the physical therapy, wellness services, and some community education components, were now added to the South Campus to be continued to be contiguous there and co-located. It was a $15 million expansion. We were able to get a favorable loan through the USDA. Part of that deal, though, was that we had to raise a couple million dollars on our own in order to finish out that project. And so we make great progress on that front. We've had a lot of good support from the community, but we're not there yet. And we still have about $700,000 to go in that campaign to meet that goal. As was mentioned in the letter attached to the agenda, we're just looking for some support to help us finish that journey and really close out the project. We'll go into a couple examples of how obviously this project has been a huge success, but it's also been a strain on our capital resources, and a couple other things we've had going on we're very excited about, but that's why we need the help, is because our capital has been in demand. You'll see here on the screen a few renderings of the new facility. If you've been there, you know it's a beautiful campus. It's a great addition. Pretty much doubled our square footage. You can see the top picture there from the northeast at ground level, the middle right there looking north from the south, and then an aerial view to the bottom and left. And so a little more detail here about the floor plan. You'll see that the areas in color are what's been added, and they're each an addition to what we've had before. Again, bringing that value of the co-location. You know, we've had a great facility there since 2009. This really augments and supplements the services that have been there in a way that they're connected, not just physically, but electronically, too, with the electronic health record that we brought in. So clearly value to come here, and they're having a one-stop shop that's easily accessible off of Highway 30 and very much coordinated in those services that we offer. This is a pretty powerful slide here to show the number of lives that we impact at Story Medical on an annual basis. A lot of people don't realize all the care that is accessed, not just in Nevada here, but also up in Zeering at our outlying clinic there, down in Maxwell, in addition to our natural medicine clinic in Ames. And so we really do serve all corners of the county, again, in a coordinated way. The numbers here, the emergency department is highly utilized. Obviously, that emergent care is augmented by the fact that we have the only helipad in Story County, so that when we are, as a facility, unable to meet your emergent needs, we're able to get you to somewhere that can't, whether it's Des Moines or it's Iowa City, wherever it is. I'd highlight that as a key piece of value. But again, access to these key services is a huge value to the community. And when you consider a broader context, too, chronic illness is the real problem with healthcare in our country, and that chronic illness exists in a small percentage of the population, but it drives the bulk of the utilization. And so what we offer are some of these key services to help prevent that chronic illness, treat that chronic illness, coordinate care around folks who have some of these barriers to accessing care. You know, sometimes it's difficult for people to travel to Ames or to Des Moines or to Marshalltown, whatever it is. That transportation is a barrier that we help with, again, by being easily accessible off of Highway 30, by being right there in our backyard. We have a great team of providers to expand the offering services in the primary health care realm, also the specialty services. That's an issue in terms of managing that chronic illness, certainly. And then the health literacy piece. A big chunk of this new expansion is dedicated to community wellness, community education. Some of the things that really help people understand their health and the needs that are before them and the challenges they're in. So a little bit more about our facility. We really are the envy of our peers across the state. This facility is state of the art. We adopted the design that's being used in other places as kind of the new standard, and it's a new design for our clinic system that builds the exam rooms around the care team so that the communication between team members is more efficient and so the patient privacy is front of mind and that it's more contained, more private, much more tailored to that experience the patients are looking for. And again, the facility brings together these services that you can see listed all in one conveniently accessible location. So again, to coordinate that care is something important. I mean, the facility itself can only do so much. If the information isn't shared securely, if it's not readily available to the providers who are delivering the care, it's just not going to be as effective, obviously. And so the other major capital investment we've recently made is an electronic health record system you may have heard of called Epic. And the reason you may have heard of Epic is because that's what Mary Greeley uses. That's what McFarland Clinic uses. Marshalltown over to the east, they're not on it yet. They're going next summer, fall to the same platform that we're on through Unity Point. And that connects us seamlessly with Methodist and Lutheran and Blank in Des Moines. And so it's a very efficient exchange of information that even reaches to the likes of University of Iowa and Mayo Clinic. So you can, if you know loved ones who access care or you yourself, you can probably think of a time you've accessed care through one of these providers. And so our investments and the way we've used our capital have enabled us to share information, again, securely and in a very timely fashion. When you're in our facility and using the services that we have here in Story County, but also when you need to go abroad, which is sometimes the case. So just kind of a quick rundown here, and I'm happy to take some questions just to kind of highlight, again, who we are and what we offer. We're a critical access hospital, which means government has designated us as meeting a need of rural communities that would otherwise struggle to have that access. As part of our Unity Point partnership, we have the support and the guidance and the resources that are at our disposal through a larger system without being beholden to them. They're our partner, but they don't dictate what we do. Our board makes those decisions locally, and we are beneficiaries of that partnership without being beholden to them. I've gone through kind of the services, but just to highlight again, our clinic system really reaches all corners of the county, and we're able to provide that access that is so important, and being able to diagnose and treat that chronic illness on the front end is so critical to happy, healthy lifestyles of the people of Story County. One thing I know I'd like to mention, Lonnie here has got some handouts, some pamphlets to show all of our providers, all of our services, and kind of a community impact piece that goes into some more detail about how our services benefit the people of Story County. So with that, I'd be happy to take some questions.
Go ahead, Lars. You were always out of the gate.
I'm on. Okay. I did spend some time on your website looking for some of the information that kind of to get a better feel about the monetary situation, and I couldn't really find anything. So I feel a little bit in the dark as far as where you really are financially. So I go back to your letter, to the letter here, and it talks about the request, with your support, we can accelerate our strategic plan, all right? So I hear the word accelerate, and I don't hear it the same as we've fallen short of our goal and we really need help. Accelerate a plan to me is we want to hurry up and get it done quicker, but you're not our last option, okay? Can you give me an idea, just a little bit financially, about are you, you know, really tapped out from the fundraising campaign, or are you looking just for money so you can go ahead and do more quickly?
I think in order to meet the evolving needs I mentioned in the letter too, you know, as healthcare changes, we're going to have to accelerate to really meet the needs. So that's what I meant, is that we are going to need to move as quickly as possible to meet those growing and changing needs of the people in the county. That's what I meant by that.
Okay, thank you.
And specifically, the needs to continually reinvest in technology and care coordination programming and things. Again, some of those programs to help manage the chronic illness, those are going to be investments too that we'll be able to make in a more timely fashion and a more intentional way if we do have the support
to get through the last stretch of our capital campaign.
Okay, great. I liked the slide with all of the impact numbers up there. That was good.
Are those 2016 numbers, or do you know what?
Yep.
Okay.
Great. That was
very recent. Mm-hmm. I just want to know how current that was, because you haven't been open that long, but I think clearly you probably surprised yourself on how busy you are.
Yes. Yeah, I think... you know, these are services that have existed in some fashion, but not have them all together. We have seen a very strong, response. And those who know about it, I think there's a lot of folks who don't realize this, as I mentioned. And we're trying to get the word out that these services are available, because, you know, we talk to people all the time who say, wow, if I would have known I could have had this service right here in the data, I would have done it. And so it's an awareness thing that I think will continue to add to the growth in the service.
So do the patient days, do they work out to equivalency of census? I mean, are they basically your hospital census days?
Right, yeah. That's it, yeah. Every patient times the number of days that they were in our
hospital. One of the things about me that impressed me, and I know I'm from the west part of the county, okay, right? But I had an aunt who had been moved, was living in an apartment in Collins to be near one of my cousins who lived in Jasper County, and she had a stroke. And she was brought to Story Medical. This has been, I don't even think you're a campus. Your South Campus was open. I think it was right during the transition period. She received excellent care, and then you got her down to Des Moines right away, because that's the care she needed. So I am aware of how necessary it is for residents in the eastern part of the county to have immediate access to medical care. So I just want to let that know, because sometimes people go back and forth about the east and the west side, but my family experienced that, and we're grateful that you were there, because it really made a difference in her recovery. So thank you for that. Then we moved us into county policy type stuff, and your ask is, I believe, something unusual, right? I mean, you know, that the county has not participated in for a while. Why don't I turn it over to you and kind of maybe the communication Rick sent? And yeah,
I would have to say this is my first question before you get around to talking about tax dollars is, are you guys still actively on a capital campaign to sunset this debt? That's not stopping. That'll never stop.
Lonnie Crane's leads our development work. That's something that we know will need to continue beyond this project and well into the future.
Okay, so this is not in lieu of, this is correlating on your working in your own behalf there. Well, that's good. On an educational basis, you know, you have a board that the hospital is responsive to. When are those meetings conducted? I mean, there are once a month meetings.
They are 10 times a year. We typically meet on the fourth Monday of the month. We post those agendas publicly ahead of time, have a period for public comment. Trustees are elected officials, and have a lot of great background, diversity, experience on that board that really fit work with. But yes, it's the fourth Monday of the month.
So this is a conversation with, before talking to us, that was had at your board in regards to approaching us?
Not at a formal meeting per se. It was certainly, as a concept, something we've always talked about. How do we learn to work, you know, better with the county and get to know.
So this is your first touch on it, but through this meeting, you will probably go back to a discussion I expect to your board.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. I would have to say this is somewhat new. It's an ask probably from the general. We're a third of the way through our fiscal. We find ourselves in good standing, and we are in a position where that would be, we can entertain an ask, I suspect, next year. But as far as commitment, I guess we're a little bit early in the process, because I'm sure you probably don't run on a calendar. You run on a fiscal. We do.
Correct.
And we would need a little bit more. We would have to do, clearly, you know, in a public setting, in the sense that, well, it is a county facility. It is, I think there's some newness about this, my recollection, my understanding, and Gloris spoke to it just a moment ago, where I would have to say that I'd like to do a little bit more of a deep dive, but I get it. What is nice, and I just say anecdotally, is you hear that there is less animus. And I don't know if animus is the right word, but between the two healthcare providers in the county, that you guys have kind of worked back and forth, is the way I understand it, talking to people that do I know families that have that Story County is their provider, and in another side of the family that they go to McFarland, Mary Greeley. Personal preference, but then you guys have worked, have a working professional relationship where you have an exchange of sorts where I don't think that necessarily gets out into the public domain.
Right. Yes, that's a great point. I mentioned the specialist physicians who visit Nevada in our specialty clinic there. You know, you talk about urologists and allergists and some of the some specialized physicians that we don't have employed under our umbrella, but who stop through to expand that access to care. McFarland Clinic is one of those partners. We had just this morning a physician come through to learn about expanding another service line that McFarland might be able to offer here at Story Medical. So it is very much a competition, certainly at times, but also a partnership. Many times in healthcare you'll find that, where you have sort of competitors who, for the betterment of the community, find ways to work together. And Mary Greeley, the same. A lot of the patients, those patient days, Laura, she asked about, are patients who spend some time at Mary Greeley and who need a different level of care that Mary Greeley doesn't offer. So they'll refer patients over, and again, through the Epic record, we can share that information. So the patient's not having to bring a big file of hard copy records or a disc. It's a lot of it is transferred right through the record, so we can see what happened at Greeley in many cases. And coordinate that care in a much more efficient and patient-centered way. So, yes, again, we obviously compete in some ways, but we collaborate for the betterment of the people here.
Coming back to, because you said a word that reminded me of something. Taxes. You're a taxing entity unto yourself. So the residents of Story County that we are taxing, you're also taxing. All right. So now, is your levy maxed out? Are you at the cap?
No. In fact, our levy rate relative to other county hospitals is quite low. And those tax dollars go to services that we're able to offer that many other county hospitals do not or cannot offer.
Throughout the years, have you taken part of that levy dollar and put it into a capital savings account, if you will, okay, or, you know, for future plans?
Certainly, I mean, that those dollars go directly to support operation, and so over time, you know, build up those reserves and be able to make those capital investments.
Okay. And I ask these questions, and yet I think we're back to the core issue here, is that we anticipate receiving a couple of other asks, big asks. Okay, coming into the next budget year. In addition, there's going to need to be an upgrade in communications in our E911 system. And it's going to be a very expensive upgrade. So we know that we are in good shape, thank goodness. Okay. We know that there are going to be some additional demands coming on us. The discussion on the budget coming in for fiscal year 19 are going to have, there'll be extra components, that possibility of needs for that and some staff. So we already know some internal issues. But coming back to, we don't believe, and we're so new, all right, that the county has ever given to for a capital campaign for another taxing entity. And so we're going to have to ask staff to investigate that. I mean, we need to even find out what kind of precedent we may be setting. Was that?
That's fair enough. Okay. Once again, I'm glad that we started the conversation. I think it has currency, as it is a county facility, and you clearly show use. It, as our population in this county grows, you will only see increased use. You have given voice to what I suspect is a third phase, and that there's more to the story remaining. Congratulations on your outreach into the counties with your other clinics. But once again, this is a conversation I would have to say that I would encourage you to have at your board table, and that I would welcome you back here, because I haven't heard anything that I find I would necessarily just dismiss outright, but I would be remiss if I didn't offer the board president, Dave Anderson, if he wanted to speak and say anything that has not been touched on, or do you think the conversation has gone as well as you would have liked?
No, I think
can I get you to come up and introduce yourself, Dave,
sure,
so we can get you read into the meeting or to the record?
I'm Dave Anderson, the chairman of the Story County Hospital. Have been on the board for over 25 years. Have had some experience going back quite a ways, too long sometimes. I think everything has been covered. We are very proud of the facility that we have. We're very proud of the providers that we have, of the services that we provide to the county. Thinking about one thing when you were talking about the epic investment that we made in the electronic health records was over $1 million. But what that means to the residents of Story County, and we do hear on a monthly basis stories from our patients that bring these to the board, and we read them at the meeting, of how we have affected lives and saved lives. If you're in an automobile accident in Story County and you're taken to Story County Hospital, brought into the emergency room, determined that you need extra care, the helicopter comes and lands, and in a matter of minutes, you can be to another facility, whether that be probably in Des Moines, could be Iowa City, and that means that your health records could conceivably beat you down to that facility. As Nate said, you're not responsible, and our providers are not responsible to bundle up those records and take them down there. So the services that we provide are more expensive all the time. We understand that. But they're very vital to all of the residents of Story County, Eastern Story County, all parts of Story County. We will be talking about this at the board meetings coming up. We thank you for that, and we thank you for the consideration. I think everything's been covered pretty well today.
I feel that I had the opportunity to self-educate. I appreciate what you showed us today, and I have an opportunity. I would encourage everybody, as you leave, that they have some brochures here that was provided to us as the board to give you an opportunity to see what happens here in Nevada at their facility that you may or may not know.
I really liked about how you ended your letter, by the way, Nate. Okay, continuing partnership with the county. I still have not given up on trying to figure out how we do housing on your north campus. Okay, I just want you to know that. I know it's a long front. I would make a motion that we ask our director of internal operations, Deb Shildroth, and she goes, oh, Lord, what are they going to ask me to do now? Deb, would it be possible for you to do some research to figure out what our history has been and maybe even bring back to the board some considerations of maybe other nearby counties who've made kind of partnerships or investments, you know, with their public entities and like that, just to kind of give us a starting point, because this is really a new area for us. So
I think it's fair to direct Deb to look into this for us and find what you can on our behalf so we can make an educated decision when the conversation returns. And I would ask you to please take it up at your board, and then when you have something further, as we go through the through 17 and 18, I suspect we'll do this again in 18, that we reconvene and talk further. So I appreciate your time. Thank you for what you taught me.
Did make a formal motion.
Okay.
Sorry.
I would second Loris's motion. That said, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anything further before we put you on your way, let you go back to what you were doing? Thank you for your time. I appreciate the literature you brought. I think that this was a good thing.
Thank you.
Well, that brings us up to some housekeeping. Consideration of the minutes.
I would move as presented.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Consideration of personal actions as presented.
I would move as presented.
Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Consideration of claims.
I would move as presented.
I'd like to note that we spent a little bit less money than we have been lately. That's always a plus. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Consent agenda.
I would move as presented.
All in favor?
Aye.
That brings us up to our public hearing items. We have Jerry Moore. Or we have the animal control first. Okay. Sue Daske. Yeah. No, I was glancing down, not up.
No.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. How are all the How are all our fur friends doing out there?
Well, it's literally become a zoo out there. Yesterday we got in rattled. And it's just, we're going to have an adoption event, a huge one. So we're going to prepare for that. Hopefully we can have some good adoptions.
Rats?
Yeah, they're domesticated. They're very friendly. I can bring them in if you want to hold them.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You got calves out there. Let them get the other hang on.
Oh, you are so mean.
Anyway, so we are bringing back for a third and final consideration the ordinance 265 that we have done the amending of our Chapter 45, which is our animal control and welfare in Story County. I think you, Deb and Sue, I would congratulate everybody. Forrest in particular, this has been something that you've moved, that there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes efforts to see us have a more robust approach to animal care and control in the county.
I feel good in that the staff had known what they needed. They were able to vocalize that very well, able to give specific examples as we went through. And I want to thank Ethan Anderson, too, okay, because he was in the work group, from the county attorney's office. And anyway, so I hope we have empowered Sue and the staff to be able to feel sometimes more supported in doing their job. They always do a good job, but sometimes I know it's tough out there to be separated from the rest of us, and also when you're dealing with living things, to feel like, am I getting the support I need? So I hope, and I, Deb's leadership in this was very, I don't know that we'd have all come together on the same point had she not kind of ramrodded us for time to time. So thank you to everybody. I'm so excited for this vote.
Has anybody through the course of these readings reached out to you and said anything to either one of you, or have you heard any public comment to reflect the differences that we're proposing or like to see anything?
We've got it, that's good.
Either we got it right or they're not watching.
Well, as you know, we said last week, you know, Rick and I both received some good comments, and you haven't heard anything of
point, because the thing is, nobody's really paid. This is something that we have brought to ourselves, and we have affected change ourselves. And if the public trusts us enough that we can move on this one, I would entertain a motion.
I would move.
No.
Public hearing.
Public. Oh, we're doing a public hearing. Right.
Thank you, Shelly.
Okay, it is a public hearing. But I would open now the public hearing. If there's anybody that wishes to comment at this time on our animal control ordinance as proposed, I'd welcome you to the mic. Seeing no one, close the public hearing, and then we will seek action.
I would move third and final consideration of the ordinance number 265, amending Chapter 45, Animal Control and Welfare of the Story County Code of Ordinances.
I would second that. All right, roll call. All in favor?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Chitty, aye. Motion passes. Congratulations. Good luck. All right, we'll put that one to bed. Good job. We have another public hearing here. Jerry Moore, we ask you to step up. Couldn't have a meeting without your department present.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Yeah, hi.
Good morning.
We get our third and final consideration of Ordinance 266. And I would let you, if you'd like to speak to it here, give us a little bit of a...
Yeah, I don't really have a full presentation. We did that the first time around. This is a process ordinance that would address the submittal process for subdivisions, conditional uses, variance appeals. It provides all the written narrative for what an applicant does on the submittal, who it gets submitted to, what boards and committees, commissions are involved in the review, the publication information, notice information, staff reports, that kind of thing. The Planning and Zoning Commission reviewed it. Also, they recommended that it's Chapter 87.02, Sub 2, the language that talks about where practical divisions should follow natural contours, such as creek streams and drainage ways, that was accepted out. That also was accepted out at the last Board of Supervisors meeting. With that, I'd be happy to answer your questions. We haven't received any additional comments from the general.
I have no questions.
public hearing?
No, that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Okay, so I'd like to open a public hearing on our Ordinance 266 on our processes and ordinance amendments for subdivision plats and conditional use permit and variance applications. Anybody wishing to speak to that? Welcome you to the mic. Seeing no one, I would close the public hearing and ask for a motion.
I would move third and final consideration of Ordinance Number 266, Processes Ordinance Amendments for Subdivision Plats, Conditional Use Permit, and Variance Applications.
I would second that and ask for a roll call vote.
Olson, aye.
Chitty, aye. Passes.
I'll clap for that one, too. Okay, that's
very
exciting.
Good. Thank you for what your office did. I mean, it was a quick little thing here, but it wasn't in your office, and I know that. Thank you for what you did.
Yeah. Well, the process is important, Jerry.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, Jerry Shepherd did that, and people, that was a good thing we just did there. Additional items, we have discussion and consideration of wiring the building for over the air television reception from Keith Morgan, who's running an operation, an exercise on an I-35 accident. So Melissa Spencer is going to step up and inform us what this ask is for in its particulars. So good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. Actually, I'm running the exercise while I'm doing this.
What's the boss doing?
The boss is out of town for a family issue, so.
Aren't you good? We're double tasking him.
Yes.
So before you start, when I got the email this morning on the closure, mm-hmm. Okay, I went, oh, should I have done something this morning? Can you edify?
Talk to the person.
Yeah, I know. That's why she's here.
For the I-35 with the email that went out this morning, the boards themselves do not necessarily have an active role in this. The board's role would be working with the public information officers on what information would be going out to the public in relation to it. The drill starts with our local telecommunicators and going through a notification process of working with Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau to establish hotel availability, to work with the Red Cross for any sheltering issues that would come up. And then we also have a partnership with Iowa State University to clear the parking lots in order to facilitate the parking of semis and tractor trailers that would need to be stopped for the night. That's just a real 100-yard view of the exercise. But we did realize after seeing some incidences down in the I-80 corridor of traffic issues that come with closures of the interstate that we did need to develop something here in Story County. And we have had some closures, and knock on wood, so far they have gone very smoothly, other than a few minor parking issues in the city of Ames. The plan has gone well. We exercise this plan annually at the end of October to prepare ourselves for the weather events that will be coming at some point over the next few months.
Thank you, and thanks for the time there.
It's something that's in process that happened today, and it's just this is what we do in for the public's behalf. So it's too early to say we did well.
It probably is a little too early to say well. We will do an after action assessment, and I have had a couple minor changes come in. We will be having a conversation with the Red Cross on some of their notification processes, but other than that, the initial inputs I have sounds like we don't have any huge changes to the plan so far this year.
And since this wasn't on the agenda, I appreciate that. We've taken no action, and I'm sure you'll come back, or Keith will come back and give us a formal update when appropriate.
But it's nice to know in real time.
Thank you.
Okay, to the point that you're here to speak to us today, Melissa.
I'm here to speak today about the process that we're looking at from an emergency management standpoint and operations of the Emergency Operations Center to be able to maintain good situational awareness as part of disaster response and recovery. Through our exercise that we conducted back in April, we realized quickly that the lack of either over-the-air or cable access hindered that process greatly. Through conversations with facilities management and actually working with our technical consultants through the Story County Amateur Radio organization, we have presented an option to improve the capability within the Emergency Operations Center, but also improve the capability within the building itself. Through the exercise, the public information officers did work out of the Board of Supervisors conference room, and it was found that they did were fairly isolated and did not have good access to information to keep good situational awareness. So the Story County Emergency Management Office is willing to purchase the cables and connectors for the entire project, but there would be a cost to Story County for amplifiers and splitters to the first and second floors. And then also a cost to the county for the installation of any television monitors into that conference room if that is determined to continue to be the place that the public information officers would work from. Story County Facility Management is willing to assist with running the cable for the process, and we will be taking advantage of an antenna that is already available on the tower on top of the administration building that is currently not in use. You know, having the situational awareness so we can inform and direct the public what to do in disasters or emergencies is very critical for that disaster emergency to run as smoothly as it possibly can. So that's why we're bringing this proposal in front of the board today to get your input or feedback on what the desire of the board is.
I would say one of my takeaways, and I think, Loris, you'd probably agree, was what we got out of this April's tornado exercise was the fact that we were moving from vacuum to vacuum, and our PIOs just did not have the real-time information. What this is to bring on-air TV coverage in a way that we can get things in real time that we may not otherwise be able to get through our own systems.
Correct, and we have tried to, we did try to work several times over the last year with the local cable provider and have just not had great success. And so in conversations with our amateur radio folks, they're like, well, we can assist you in developing a system that you could bring over the air into the building. So that would give us the main local channels and then any other national news that may come up on our standard channels here. And we feel that would still give us the situational awareness that we would need to be able to keep the public informed and directed as the need arises from the disaster.
I didn't see a number in here for the actual cost of the hardware. Do we have a guesstimate?
I do have a rough estimate. The cost of the amplifiers and splitters run about $50 a piece. I don't have a firm number on the with me on what it would take, but the approximate cost of those is about $50. A 55-inch TV, which is very similar to what we installed in the Emergency Operations Center. When we purchased those for that project, they were roughly $1,000 a piece. I would guess since it's been a year or more since we put that in, that cost may have come down. But those were simply TVs that were anybody can go buy at Best Buy. So I don't have a total cost estimate right now. But this definitely is a low-cost alternative that I believe and that Keith believes would save the county funding because we're taking advantage of systems that are already in place. We're just adding on to them.
So you're looking for direction from us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
You got enough information to feel comfortable without a dollar value attached. It's not big dollars here.
It's not big dollars.
Yeah.
You know, the cable... our office would absorb the cost from the cable, and that would, you know, running up through all three levels of the building would be the cost. The splitters and the amplifiers, again, we believe are roughly about $50 a piece. Mm-hmm. And then with facilities being willing to help, that will also greatly reduce out-of-pocket costs.
So our cost, as far as we would fund, would just be for the monitors themselves.
The monitors and the amplifier splitters.
Okay.
That would come to the first and second floors. So we would absorb the cost for... anything that would go from the emergency management office and into the EOC.
So we're probably looking at less than $1,500. I mean, I don't know how many splitters you need, but like I said, I'm not exactly sure.
I understand, but I mean, we're
splitters, but
it was a glaring deficiency.
Right.
One of the takeaways that you knew before you even got done walking out from that day was this is something we needed and did not have.
So I, even without a dollar, I'm glad you spoke to him because that was my concern. I just wrote to myself, and I have comfort in entertaining a motion to approve.
I would move that we direct emergency management staff, we appreciate it, facilities management, to pursue this project.
I would second that. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Would you please start moving on that now? And I thank you for the time that you spent looking into this and acknowledging the fact that from April to now that we have something we need to address, because that will make us a better governing entity by being able to, and I hope we never need it.
It is one of those things that is kind of an insurance policy, but when we need it to be there. So
yes, we know what it looks like when we didn't have.
Right. We appreciate your action on this, and we will work with facilities to move forward.
Congratulations. Maybe it'll be the first Allegheny way to go on the I-35 project. Right. And it sounds like we can say that's in the bag, but not yet. But nonetheless, I appreciate what you did for us today, Melissa. Thank you. That said, I would welcome Captain Barry Thomas up here to talk about the consideration of hiring two detention officers as of tomorrow, and let him tell us that story. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Morgan. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for coming.
Yep, sorry the sheriff's not here and you have to second best. That's the way it goes.
I think we did fine.
Yeah, we did fine. We're good.
So what we have in front of the board today is just an ask for you guys to consider allowing us to backfill a couple of positions. This is something that historically that we have done when we've had, especially when we have detention officers who we have identified as candidates for deputy sheriff's positions. What this will do will be for about 1 month, because we anticipate probably a November 27th-ish hire date for these new DOs that we're looking at. So for 1 month, we're asking the board to consider to have those extra detention officers back there while the sworn officers-to-be are also back there. It just helps us immensely with our ability to train and cuts down on the amount of time that we have to have overtime to cover positions.
I think just on its face, this makes sense. I'm glad that we have the ability to provide the overlap for the additional training, because you put them into an environment that you can't know too much back there. So I have comfort in doing this. This is not, they brought this to us, explained it very well prior to this, and I would support a motion to effect this.
Sure. I just want to say, once again, thank you for coming, because I misunderstood what this ask was. I thought these were brand new positions. And I heard a rumor maybe that, you know, at some point we were going to get an ask from the Sheriff's Department for additional staff. And I'm like, seriously? This is it? This is one page, three paragraphs, four paragraphs. Anyway, so yeah, once it was explained to me, very comfortable. And so I said, could you come and explain it so that it was in the record? So I would make a motion.
I would say, and I'm glad to hear that we have the quality of officers in the jail that you feel comfortable putting them out on the road, because that's my protection. So thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion passes. Thank you for your time,
guys.
Have a good day. Leanne, there'll be another meeting without you. So we're going to talk about our project fund allocations from our economic development group. And Leanne, we had a meeting last Thursday, and I believe we have some proposing here. So.
Good morning. What is before you is the recommendations from the Story County Economic Development Group for the project funds for fiscal year 2019. These are the funds formerly known as pool funds. We now are, according to the bylaws, calling them project funds. Each jurisdiction that's a member of the Story County Economic Development Group has the opportunity to submit a request. Those were submitted in August and reviewed by the Economic Development Group. $15,000 was identified from the funding. The total request for $17,000. They did modify, reduce the percentage of all the applications to get that down to $15,000. The applications were on your agenda, but I'd be glad to go over them. Any questions?
Lars, you kind of were driving part of this. Oh. You want to tell your story?
Oh, okay. There are two new community asks, or new communities that have not previously asked for these pool funds, Ames and Nevada, correct? They've not historically asked for pool funds?
Nevada has.
Oh.
Nevada actually last year used them project funds for the intern position they had, helping with the Main Street analysis.
Okay. I had
mentioned to the chamber director about that we had that there was this kind of money was available for a new CHEDAC.
The Nevada Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
Is
a new entity.
Both the city and the Nevada Economic Development Corporation have used this pool fund, project fund.
And then the Ink Foundation with the Miracle League is a new ask as a result of us discovering we were not able to contribute to the Miracle League in another manner. And so I know that that's generated conversation. I understand I had to leave the message leave the meeting Thursday early, but I did talk to Jennifer, the chair of this board, and she said that everyone had decided to come back and have more discussion about how pool applications would be handled in the future, what qualified, also money distribution.
I think that the collective, and I don't mean to speak for anybody, but what I got in listening is the fact that there's a better way to deliver. I think that, you know, the conversation is an evolving thing, and I think we're going to get to another place. We're not there yet, but we've chosen to take it honest, but this reflects what was agreed to here today.
Next Tuesday, you'll see the annual allocations that were decided by the group last Thursday.
Okay.
So those will be, again, for the eligible communities. And then the forms were all distributed at the meeting so that those will be returned in a timely fashion so that we can get caught up. We've been operating on a calendar year for several years as a group. Now we're on a fiscal year, and so ideally this will be accomplished right around June and July so that we'll be matching the calendar or the fiscal year.
All right. You've done a good job of messaging to the fact some of our communities are better about making application than others, and that it would be nice. Sooner is better than later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is clearly part of the conversation and the changes that we're, the expectations as far as the administration side, it needs to be done in a timely manner because they know when they have something they wish to make application for, and waiting until the last minute to give us that application doesn't serve.
Right, and I, you know, also earlier this year, just to kind of clean up on this, is I'd asked a question about the Ames allocation, and now that's clarified that every year the city councils will make a determination about who gets the funds. They will direct that, which I think was just something that didn't come up until somebody like me who's always looking at the really minor details takes care of it. And so I'm pleased where this project is going. I'm looking for where this allocation is going, and I'm excited to see what the next phase of it is. So, I think I'm done.
Okay, well, I would say at that point, then we just would direct Leanne to bring this back to us because this is not.
No, it's consideration.
Consideration.
Yes.
Okay, then I guess we're going to move on it.
I would move that we approve the submission from the Story County Economic Development Group for distribution of these pool or project funds as noted.
Second. Olson.
Aye.
Judy, aye. There you go. Leanne, number four.
Okay.
Discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next. I'm going to apologize. I'm stifling a sneeze. So, okay.
Yeah, so you're looking at it just like, okay, you got one more thing you want to go through. It's discussion consideration of ordinance development and review guidelines manual. Leanne Harder, you're up.
What is before you is a culmination of a couple years' work. Not saying that this took a couple years put together, just working with other entities and then different comment periods and whatever it may be. It was identified as part of my work program as well as in my goals through my performance evaluation to come forward with this ordinance development review guidelines. It was kind of a brainchild of the planning and development department several years ago. That department was working with Shelley a lot to do ordinances, as they still do. And it just, we were asking the same questions over and over and over, and we finally just said, hey, let's put together a guide. And then I transferred up into the position where I'm currently in and took it with me. So there's a history of this. What I'm going to present to you just in very simple format is the process to adopt an ordinance. What the goal of the ordinance is that elected officials and department heads can take it if they want to amend an ordinance, develop an ordinance, whatever it may be. It's just their cheat sheet to work through that process. Wanted to help Shelley out, the clerk, to the board supervisors out, and then really so solidify that process and make sure everyone's following the same thing, because a lot of it is rooted in our code ordinances, but also in the code violations. So it's important that we all follow a consistent format. So with that, I may go over the process to adopt the ordinance. Very simple. There are several steps. This is the first of three slides. And this is all spelled out in the guide. The elected office or department responsible for enforcement of proposed policy or amendment drafts an ordinance, and then that goes right to the county attorney's office. And so whether it's a new ordinance or revised ordinance, like with the animal shelter or animal control ordinance, that was revisions to Chapter 45, that goes through work with the county attorney's office. There may be some other work groups that would be established at that point, too, but the guide is silent on that. That really kind of becomes the purview of the elected official. Then once the county attorney's office becomes comfortable with it, it goes to the Planning Zoning Commission, Conservation Board, Board of Health, whatever, if that is applicable. There are some ordinances that just don't fall. For example, Chapter 80, floodplain management, would not go to any other entity. That's a standalone ordinance that comes right to the Board of Supervisors. Then the elected official department head requests resolution ordinance numbers. And it seems kind of funny to have this in a guide, but that's a very important step, because before you even put anything on the agenda center, you need to know those numbers. And Shelley needs to have a heads up that these are coming her way, too. And be able to address that when you're scheduling the first, second, third considerations. We know we have a board meeting. It's also very important that the clerk be aware of what's coming your way, so that if someone asks if we can have a limited agenda or something, Shelley can say, oh, we already have a public hearing today. So it's really to improve communications in that vein. And then following the information set forth and guidelines and instructions for the agenda, you place the individual in the department responsible for placing items in Civic Plus puts on the agenda. Again, this is very detailed, but it's done so on purpose so that anyone can go through and do it. Then public hearing date gets set to the Board of Supervisors. Legal notice is sent to publication. I'm going to just back up and say there's examples of legal notices, ordinances, everything in the appendices of this guide. Publication is placed in all three newspapers. I do want to note in the guide itself on page 7, there's this next one, at least once, not less than 4, no more than 20. It only says 2 in parentheses, should be 20. So that's page 7, item number 6. And then prior to the legal notice being published, a copy of the ordinance itself is placed in the auditor's office. Your legal notice says that there's a copy available for public review, and it's very important you take that step for the ordinance on the counter. In public that do read the legal notices will show up from time to time and request that, and it can make the job for the clerk a little bit easier. And considerations of the Board of Supervisors are held, you know, first, second, third, waived, or whatever that may be the process. And then, Stacy was here, see your picture.
Yeah.
The clerk distributes the ordinance to the elected official or department head, who records it with the county recorder's office. After that third and final consideration, so again using the animal control ordinance as an example, the ordinance or the summary gets published in official newspapers. In this case, we're doing a summary, and so Deb has drafted it. I'll send it over to legal notices so that they know to publish it. It's upon that publication that the ordinance actually becomes effective. It's not yet effective today. It's once that publication is filed. So we're shooting for November 9th, next Thursday. The supplemental record in the Code of Ordinance is amended. That's kind of that table in the front that says, here's the ordinance, here's what it modified. And then the auditor prints the ordinance on behalf of the Board of Supervisors. This is another item I'd like to recommend changing. This is number 12 on page 7. It just says the entirety of the ordinance is published by the auditor. It seems a little bit confusing. I'd say it's printed by the auditor, because we're tying publication of legal notices, and that's always the responsibility of the official department head. Really, what the auditor's office is doing is printing a copy, whether that includes placing on the website or not. I'll get to that shortly, how that will work. So as we went through this, we also started the codification update, and Alyssa, mid-December is what you thought? We'll have a draft. We thought about holding this till then. Really, the process is in and of itself that I laid out will not be changing. You did talk to Iowa Codification and ran it through them. What will happen probably is the process, once that printed copy is available, then there are some additional steps will need to occur, and that's yet to be decided at this point. How the Iowa Codification gets updates, how often those are published, and that's part of what they're being held responsible to present back to us. Is that correct?
Yeah, we just need to decide
how. Okay. So I'll take questions, but shortly I just want to say we were following a similar process to what we did with the RFP manual and other proposals that have come before the board. Send this out to a 7-day review and then come back with those two noted changes I did say though to the board on 11/17, and any comments that I hear back from the elected officials and department heads. Once it's formally approved, then next week distribute and place on our county's intranet. We did use this in a draft format to go through Chapter 45. The way this PDF is set up, it's all linked to. It's hyperlinked, so you can go to the table of contents and go right to the appendices, and then we'll have a Word format as well so that you can just either copy and paste on the PDF or just use a Word format too. I spend a lot of my time, which I'm glad to do, but helping other departments draft legal notices, draft ordinances, and whatever that may be. This will actually alleviate some of that pressure and give them some power on their own. Yeah. Any questions?
No, I appreciate the PowerPoint. It makes it a little more clean, because when you start doing what we do, I know you've had your how we do this, who we talk to, what's the process. I mean, that is learning administration as to what it's done. I appreciate what you've done, because you've cleaned it up from the way I found it.
I enjoy going through this. I know that sounds funny for that kind of manual, but because I found myself several times having to say, that's why we do this, or that's how it should have been done, or that's the question I should have asked. So I found it very enlightening. It's probably not a general audience read. But you did a great job. Everybody contributed.
I did have one other thing on that page 7. Mm-hmm. I'd like to request modifying item number 9 as well.
Okay.
The last line says the elected office department that drafted the ordinance are responsible for setting the ordinance. I'd like to add or summary to papers for official publication. Earlier in that paragraph it says or summary, and by code we can do either an ordinance or summary. If you look at the floodplain management ordinance, well, if you look at the ordinance that Jerry just had for it, it would be like a 30-page document, and that legal notice would be, what, $3,000 each probably? I know we've done, when we have to do the floodplain management ordinance in the past, it's been $3,200 each publication. Doing a summary does allow us to really considerably cut down that cost, maybe a little bit more manageable. So I'd just like to add or summary too on item number 9. I'm sorry, I failed to mention that one.
I would move that we have staff put this out for 7-day review. That's what you wanted. Okay. Put out for 7-day review. Was it come back to us on November 7th, I believe it is. All right. And that the special project manager makes the changes as she requested during the presentation.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So, Leanne, you're going to bring this back to us next week.
I will.
Clean up.
Okay.
So, thank you for what you've done on behalf of everybody that's ever been.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot. It was a little clunky.
I know the process extremely well, and I'm always asking Shelley questions.
Well, that's where I start. I just show you how we do that.
This will help me immensely.
Yeah. So, it makes her life easier and all the better.
I didn't realize how many times Shelley was in and out of it playing this kind of role, central moving it forward. I did learn a lot in reading that.
She's a gatekeeper on our behalf, and sometimes it's just like, if you get yes and no's, and you want to know why you get both. And I think this helps.
Yeah.
So, very good. Thank you, Leanne.
brings us up to discussion and consideration of providing Optum A Life Service a 6-month notification to vacate the group home located on 124 South Hazel in Ames as of 5-1 of next year. Deb Schildroth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a little bit of history as to why we're considering this. The group home at 124 South Hazel is, like the other two group homes, is licensed as a residential care facility. It was under the operation of the county, and when Story County Community Life Program was the service provider. At the time that Optum A took over those services and signed leases for all three group homes, there was discussion about the South Hazel group home possibly being used for another purpose based on what the Central Iowa Community Services Mental Health Region saw that it would be needed for. So we've kind of been in that pilot mode since May 1st of 2015. Trying to determine what is the best use for this particular home because of its location so close to downtown and the hospital and those other kinds of services. Mary Greeley, Medical Center, the region, and Story County have been talking about crisis stabilization and transitional living services at this particular location. So that would mean there would be staff there 24/7, just like there is now. Mary Greeley would be the provider of those services and would have that direct tie-in to the behavioral health unit if there was a client there that needed inpatient services. And so Mary Greeley's put a proposal together. We've done a first review of that, we meaning the region, myself, and Mary Greeley. We just met last Friday, and there's some more information that is needed. But one of the things that Optum A has requested, and we've kept them in the loop each step of the way so this isn't a surprise to them, but they wanted at least a 6-month notification to look at where the 8 residents who are in the South Hazel group home, where they're going to be relocated to. If it's going to be another facility or into apartment settings or whatever the case may be, something that's going to best meet their needs. So that is the first step that we're taking. I did have Ethan Anderson in the county attorney's office look over this letter. He feels that this that we should reach out and ask about whether or not Optum would want to enter into a separate agreement about this notification. I also did contact Bill Dodds, the CEO of Optum A, on Friday and let him know this was on the board's agenda today. And he responded and appreciated the heads up. But at this point in time, we are just wanting to reach out to Optum A, let them know that we're moving in the direction of a different use for that group home, and that our county attorney's office can set up an agreement to that effect so that it encompasses the next 6 months and when they need to vacate by May 1st of 2018. The other little piece I want to mention, too, is we've been keeping the neighborhood association in that area up to date on possible changes with that group home location. They had their picnic in September. Debbie Lee is their organizer and communicator, and so I went and talked to the group about where we were heading with the group home. Questions or comments?
Mike, the question I have is related to Optum A and a client that Optum A serves there. Is there a plan in place so that those clients have another place to go? I mean, I know it's really is Optum A's problem, but I'd hate for us to inadvertently end up causing a problem for what, are there 8 consumers there? Or?
Yes, they are full. They have all 8 beds are being utilized, and this is letting Optum A know they can start those planning processes. And it's a good question, Morris, because the 8 people that live there even 3 months ago could be very different than who's living there now. You know, there is that people move in and out of that level of care depending on their needs. And so, you know, if we would notify Optum A even this last July, it was going to be different. Different plans for different people who are living there. And Optime must be very careful about operating a group home as people are moving out of it, because the staffing's got to stay the same for them regardless if there's eight people there or three. And so they want to be careful on how they're moving people out and yet being able to meet their financial obligations.
Your concerns are valid. That's why you see the reflection of the time frame. You know, 6 months, that's half a year, and that take notice of the fact that, you know, we've talked about both on the region and here within the county, it's just, you know, it's a changing environment. There's nothing static about it except where the building lies. And so as we transition it to TLC crisis stabilization, we're just addressing a different need that exists within the district, and I think it will serve Story County as well. And it's being welcomed. I mean, I can tell you on the regional level, this is something that is encouraged. We've been encouraged to do. We might be possibly entertaining a little bit of regional funding to help us do this. Don't know that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the thing. Clearly, the need exists, and we have the ability to provide with an existing facility. Lucky us.
Yeah.
But the thing is, often made to that end, you know, after this time frame, actually they started a year, settled on six. And as far as we're on a relocation basis, I think that's more their story to tell. I was hoping Bill was going to come today. He was extended the opportunity. He did not choose to be here.
Great. And I'm glad, because that was my other question, was to turn to you and ask, how is the region receiving
this? Region sees this as something worthy of its implementation and quite possibly some of its dollars.
Okay.
So I would say stay tuned at that point.
Okay. I believe the hospital is looking at it as a way to ease up demand on their emergency room visits, and of course law enforcement, a place to take people. They can be screened and then taken to this location, and then law enforcement may not have to sit for several hours, you know, waiting to know where to take somebody. So we're hoping that it's a win-win on all levels, and we definitely will meet a need here in Story County and within the region. The other positive, I think, that's occurring too, is if some of these clients who are currently living in this location can move to an apartment, it seems that the apartment vacancies are a little more readily available now than they were a year ago, even 6 months ago. So maybe that will help the cause too, if people can be in an apartment setting and of course want to stay in the
community. I heard 7%. That's what I heard at the Legal Women Voters Forum on affordable housing. 7% vacancy rate in Ames now for rental units, which is amazing compared to that 1% before.
That's great.
I think that works in our favor. It's just a confluence of events as they pass each other by. Maybe quite likely this is just something that a need gets addressed, and the timing as such allows people that will be displaced to go into a setting that they otherwise might not likely have had the opportunity to get to.
Yeah, I agree. So great. So then, because I have to throw this in, and just you and Carla, let me know when you guys are ready, and we'll go over and have that little talk with YSS and Christy Press about juveniles, right? So that would be the other thing, is what can we do similar that night for juveniles? Exciting.
That said, if you'd like to make a motion, I think we'd get some done today.
I would move that we direct staff to send this letter as worded once Chairman Sanders reads it over and agrees to put his signature on it as worded. Okay?
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much, Deb.
Yep,
right,
thank you.
We have a discussion and consideration. We're bringing this back for a second time. Dixon Jensen's request to submit Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Sherry Moore, come on down.
Good morning again.
Yeah, it still is. Okay.
This is a part of the action that was taken last week by the board to approve the four residential parcel subdivisions with the condition that Mr. Jensen submit the Ames Urban Fringe Plan map amendment. The amendment process is really twofold. The first part of that is to get a majority approval to allow the applicant, in this case Mr. Jensen, to submit the application, either Story County, City of Gilbert, or the City of Ames, a majority of the three entities. And then the second part involves the actual amendment, which requires approval by all three entities to do that. So
I have just a very brief presentation. Again, the action last week by the board was to approve with the condition that Mr. Jensen submit the request, which he's done. The Ames City Council will take this up at their meeting on the 14th of November. The City of Gilbert will take it up on the 6th. Again, that's just to decide on whether or not they want to accept the application to amend the plan. Again, to approve it requires a majority of all of the three entities to approve the change. And so for what that means for Story County is this item would be, if this is approved, to accept the application, it would go before the Planning and Zoning Commission on the 6th of December and then the 12th to the Board of Supervisors. And for Marty's benefit, this is about an 80-acre area. It's southeast Ames, east of the airport, west of Highway 69. It's approximately 80 acres, all owned by Mr. Jensen. There's a dwelling on each one of those parcels, and the request was to divide each one of those once for an additional single-family dwelling. So that leads us to the motion, which, being consistent with the action that was taken last week, was to approve the residential parcel subdivisions with the request that Mr. Denson submit that. Okay. Yeah, answer your questions.
No questions?
No, I have none. I've been down with Jerry on this a number of times, just talking about it was kind of a moving target for a while. And since we're the first to move on it, I think your department is going to bring to the BNZ, and we watch what the other partners do. Jerry, next. In coming months.
So I move that we support Mr. Jensen's submission of an Ames Urban Fringe Plan map amendment, conditional approval of the four residential partial subdivision plats of Timber Creek Acres.
That's everything.
Okay, yeah, from what I can see.
Second. All right. Jerry, anything else?
That's it.
All right.
Also, the amendment will be before you in December.
All right.
Okay.
So when everybody else has acted upon it, we get a recommendation from DNZ, and then we know what Gilbert Haynes think of it. Olson.
Aye.
Judy.
Aye.
Very good, Jerry. Thank you for what you've done on this one. Brings us to agency reports. Carla Webb, welcome back. It has been too long.
Sorry, Carla, but I see that Darren's back with the contractor from before. Is that not correct, Darren? The contractor doesn't have to sit here any longer. Carla, could we quickly kind of rearrange that? If that's okay.
We don't have any contractors.
Oh, you're not. Oh, my God, Andrew. I told you.
I'm looking at it. Yeah, that's
this one near, this one far, has been really a growth opportunity without the other set.
Darren, if you have anything, Carla, if you just give us this moment, do you have anything you want to?
Really quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Morning, Andrew.
Yeah. I guess before we check the numbers and everything checked out, fine. So I would recommend the board go ahead and award contract at Jensen Builders out of Des Moines, Iowa, and that will allow us to prepare the contract before Thursday and get it on next week's board agenda.
Once again, I said it earlier tonight, everything we bid on a paving basis or a bridge basis or everything has come in under expectation this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you keep track of those numbers, I think I'm going to start, but it is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars that, you know, we think that we have a reasonable expectation that it will be right around this number, and we keep getting underbid, and that is a great thing for the taxpayers of this county. So,
buildings was a little different for me, but it came under as well, so that's a good thing.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Thank you, Darren.
Sorry.
Andrew, go have your day.
You probably want to take official action to award the contract.
How are we going to work that in?
I'll have you sign off on the bid tip. So I'll give that to Shelley, but probably won't take
it. Okay, no, I will visit with Shelley then and go from there.
No, just go ahead.
I move that we accept the bid of Jensen Contractors in the amount of
$3,400.
Second.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yep. There we go. Thank you, Darren. I appreciate that. I'm glad to check out. And we'll see you in a bit. All right. Carla?
All right. Thanks, Carla.
Good morning. Carla Webb with Community Services. I'm here to talk with you about our quarterly report for the period of July 2017 through September 2017. For general assistance for single household cases, we assisted 16 individuals in 25 family households for a total of 41 for the period. Denials, that would be when we're referring an individual on to another entity that we're unable to assist them because they don't meet program criteria. We had 260 applications where we referred those individuals on to other resources. We had 8 people that applied but did not return for whatever reason. Types of assistance provided for rent, we provided $13,680.92. Utilities was $639.56. And then for miscellaneous items, such as the bulk of that's going to be burial. There may have been some transportation in that. It was $5,558. For Crestview Mobile Home Park Relocation Assistance, we provided assistance to 4 single households and 1 family for the quarter. For a total of $1,585.42. And then currently we do not have anybody receiving the SSI interim program. For substance abuse services, we paid on 10 claims. I believe some of those claims were cleanup from FY17 that carried over into 18. Do you have any questions on those numbers?
I do. Coming back to the denials of 260, that's in a quarter, so 90 days. And when I did the math, that means that about 85% of the people who applied, we ended up denying. So I thought, you know, what is the reason for this? Is it that they don't know what the requirements are up front, or is it that maybe they're applying because they need your denial to go somewhere else, or so?
Yeah, the process typically is before someone is able to access services with another community agency, they're asked to come in and apply with our office first. And so that helps those agencies save their dollars if they are eligible through our office. So we're kind of that first stop for many folks. Agencies generally require a notice of decision from us, as well as MICA, especially now that we're into the utility lighting season and that too for folks. They ask them to go through MICA in our office first before they're looking at assistance.
And since you bring up LIHEAP, before we go on, I seem to recall hearing something on the radio about is Congress looking at doing away with LIHEAP?
Okay,
I might have heard it wrong. It's because it was on the car radio, and I was getting out of it at the time. But
okay, so generally with LIHEAP, I know it starts the beginning of October for elderly and disabled individuals to start applying, and then the general public starts in November.
I'm thinking this would be for the next fiscal year, federal fiscal year, but so yeah, so not right away, but just something maybe to put on the back of your thought process there. I think I heard it on NPR.
Okay, thank you.
I'm done. Thank you.
No, just once again, welcome back. You've been gone here, 6 weeks now, and it's good to have you. I'll be glad when you don't have these quarterly reports that has anything on Crestview. And I think we're getting to that point. And considering how much money we allocated, that's a very small ask. I'm kind of surprised. I know we've got some pending issues out there. I don't know if this will go up, but I guess.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. You give us, you inform the board every week's end, and Aaron did too, on the status on. Would you like to speak to that? Just kind of give a real time where we are on the Crestview.
Sure, you bet. I know there are some more claims. I think may have been on the agenda for today to be paid out, and they're in reference to Crestview. So this next quarter, I think we're going to see those dollars go up as far as what's been expended. We, in total, I believe we had 14 applicants. And we have two individuals that are still have their trailer located at Crestview. The trailer's been approved to be moved by the DNR, so they've had the inspection completed. Those folks are trying to find a place to move their trailer to. So they're running into some issues that way. Otherwise, of the other applicants that we were working with, they have all since moved from Crestview. So we're doing some, you know, final bills and that for some folks. We just processed the claims to come out this cycle for the company that did the asbestos inspection and that. So that's being wrapped up and taken care of. So I think we're down to really those two folks that are still have their trailer there, just trying to figure out what are they going to end up doing ultimately.
Okay. Lots of success stories, I define it.
Yeah, thanks again to Aaron and to you and to Deb and Ethan. And I know I'm leaving out all of the people in community services who reacted to every twist and turn. You guys reacted quickly, knowledgeably. I hope that it kept you somewhat stress-free, or at least you took appropriate mental health action. Thank you, Marty, for leading that, because that was just absolutely, following that via email was incredible. I can't imagine what it took to go through personally some of what was being dealt.
And I did share with you, if you hadn't seen the email from DNR yesterday, as far as their component is what this facility is stepping up to. They are going to have an oversized presence now as the county recedes. So,
I do have one question from your update, or the update you gave us, though, about we still haven't received any invoices from RV.
Right. We're still waiting for the rental paperwork to come back to our office for the residents that moved into an RV park owned or operated by RV Horizon. Right. We've done reach out to them. It has resulted in the turn in paperwork.
No. I just
we'll continue to, you know, do what we can to encourage that.
Thank you for that. I know on our end, we'll pay it when it comes, but I just get worried with all the twists and turns there have been about the impact of those residents, who knows what letter they may get asking for the bill themselves or anything that could once again put them in a stressful situation or feeling that they may not know what's next.
Certainly, definitely, yeah.
Thanks.
And I'd like to just take a moment to commend our staff in our office. It was really a team effort by everybody within our office, from our administrative assistant staff to our service coordinators, to Aaron. Everybody worked well together. We communicated a lot with each other, and I think that just really helped to move things along. Certainly, we always try to answer the residents' questions when they called and things, too. So we appreciate the support of the board as we look through everything.
No, it was the easy part. You had to do the real work.
Yeah, and I see Jerry out there, too, and thank you to Margaret, because, I mean, you know, the enforcement end that allowed some of this to move forward.
I would say I'm going to leave 17 with a lot more knowledge about mobile homes than I started.
Great.
Thank you for what you do, and like I say, welcome back.
Okay. You want me to go on to anything else in my report?
I think it is pretty straightforward. I guess I do, on the denial basis, that was a number that jumped out at me that was kind of high, but then again, I would ask you as an administrator if that is something that is not out of line, and you gave some pretty good rationales. I guess that it just is what it is.
You bet. And I mean, we keep running totals through each fiscal year, so I've got numbers going back to FY08. Our average right now is about 87 a month. In FY08, it was 81, so we're up, you know, just a little bit. Last year we ended at 74, so it kind of racked the means a little bit, but not to extreme measures, I don't think.
Okay.
I'd like to have you jump down then to the opioid task force and kind of talk about that noise, bring people, or that issue, and bring people up to date about where that's headed.
You bet. Erin Rewerts attended, though there was a couple of meetings that took place while I was off, and she's worked to fill me in on that. There is a town hall, well, let me back up actually. The committee is working with Dr. Gastallo with Primary Healthcare to come to Ames to do a grand rounds with physicians at Mary Greeley, and that's being set up for January 10th of 18. And the committee is also talking about doing a town hall meeting, possibly that same day. It would be open to public members. We would have speakers come in who can talk about the epidemic as well as treatment options. I think we're still needing to finalize things with that occurring. I know the committee has been trying to collect data as far as number of individuals affected by opioid use, and I think those numbers have been a little bit difficult to come by, so that's something that they're continually looking at. There was an individual from Iowa State University that presented on a report for college students. I looked at that report, not having been at that meeting. It was a little difficult for me to understand some of the data, and Erin shared, I think, that some of the committee members had some questions and things on that data as well. So that's kind of what I know as far as the updates. And, Lawrence, I think you had been in attendance as well. Am I missing anything?
Right, no. Yes, about mentioning about the out-of-state information did not seem to be valid for graduate students. As an example, it showed 100% use of inhalants. And I really just don't think that the ISU graduate students are huffing. You know, any rate, I mean, so they knew, you know. So they have to clean that up. Just to let you know that I've been approached by two members of the community who wants the task force after January 10th, okay, maybe at that town hall. They'd like to sign up to be part of it, see what they can do to help or whatever. And I told them that you would be the contact person, but probably wait until January 10th because of you know, the groups just headed into that planning with the holidays. So, yeah, so at least there's interest out there of the community, too.
And as this comes our way, I think you can't be too far, too fast ahead of it. We are having a conversation in the background, too, and to this end, that I look forward to what you get out of the orders. Okay. You know, so.
You're saying we, CIICS?
No, I'm talking about Kate.
Oh, yeah. I'm meeting with...
go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Marty was having a conversation with the VP...
Kate Gregory.
With Kate Gregory, who is the VP of services, ISU services. And then she asked something about the opioid, which then Marty said, we'll talk to, you know, Laura. And so I'm going to go ahead and coffee with her next week. So apparently ISU is starting to become interested. And depending on how that goes, then I'll be coming back to you and Deb and seeing, you know, maybe what liaisons are hooked up with each other, whatever. But they're interested in what's happening.
No, they started the conversation when... Kate and I were down in Columbia, Missouri in September. Went in a lunch line. She turns around to me and said, what are you guys doing about the opioid crisis? Mm-hmm. And she caught me pretty flat-footed. And I said, it is a discussion item. There is no action proposed as is. And she said, you know, she just kind of let go of that, and it had been bouncing around my head. And I thought, okay, Laura says she's been stepping out and doing some things that maybe this is, you're more inclined to have this conversation on our behalf. So it was kind of a handoff.
Yeah.
So I look forward to seeing what Laura gets to.
I'll let you guys know. I especially want to talk a little bit about what the sheriff is doing, too, in protective gear, because I believe ISU police might report to her.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, you know, a service. But anyway, so we'll let you know, but that those conversations are going forward. Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else you wanted to speak to us on? I think you pretty much touched it all.
Good.
Well, thank you much, and on behalf of Brett was saying it in a meeting, Brett McLean, our VA director, he appreciated the fact that the board funded the money to get Erin trained to help take some workload off of him as far as dealing with some veteran walk-ins that they can be dealt with in his absence, and I think that you see the numbers there on the use, and it was worthy training that she enjoyed in Texas.
Yeah, I think that relationship's working out well. She is able to see those folks when they're coming in the door if Brett's not available. So,
right.
I think it's a good setup.
Yeah. Thank you much.
All right, thank you.
Well, that's all we have for work today, but that brings us to the public forum. Anybody here so inclined that they'd like to speak to us on anything of the day? Seeing a bunch of lack of interest, we will pass on that liaison assignment. Laura.
Okay, two things I'd like to bring people up to date on. The housing needs assessment. I went over last week and met with the Director of Planning and Zoning or Development for the City of Ames, and also Vanessa Latimer Baker, who is their housing expert. We discussed a little bit the survey or the assessment that was done and the process of it 19 years ago. Vanessa was the co-chair along with Les Beck, who was the Planning and Development Director here at the county at the time, and discussed maybe changes that might be applicable. Also, because the city is going through their comprehensive plan, they will be doing some of this internally, their staff. And so what's going to happen is that the Planning and Development Director is going to put something in front of the Ames City Council on November 14th that is kind of their counter proposal about how we might be able to coordinate work together with it, which is fine because all we have asked is, do you want to participate and help pay for it? So everything from there is whatever works best for everyone. And so we'll see what the City Council decides on November 14th about what kind of route and approach to take for it so that we can get moving on this. Okay. Also, then, this is from the last HERTA board meeting about public transit. And I'm kind of looking out to Deb and Carla again because I don't know if you've heard about this already. It's a little bit off on the periphery of what you guys do, but there has been a new change with Medicaid again when it comes to paying for the transportation of people in group homes. And as And they, all of the transit companies in Iowa, the public transit companies for the most part, all right, but all transit providers, but is really going to hit the public transit companies. They have 1 month to come up with an entirely new plan for billing on Medicaid patients because they can't bill the Medicaid managers directly anymore. Now they have to bill the group homes. I don't even know what that means for the finances of the group homes. We just talked about the public transit part, but, you know, but so now all of a sudden these group homes are going to get the bills from the transit, from transit directly to pay for their clients to move. And so definitely there's going to be cost involved when it comes to changes in the billing systems for both all of the group home providers and for the transit companies. And as I said, we did not get into whether the group homes are going to be paid any more money or not for this. So I just refer it out your way and to anybody else who has some kind of knowledge or interest on this. I was moving forward.
Carly, yeah, you'd be welcome if you could address that.
Yeah, please.
I talked to a couple of our staff. I think it was just late last week they were letting me know of this change that was coming forward. And my understanding was it's affecting folks that are on waiver programs, so home and community-based waiver services, that if they are in like a 24-hour site, they maybe are going out to like a day have program or a work services program, typically the waiver has funded for transportation services to take that individual from their home to the program and bring them back. And I've heard that is what is changing, that no longer will the waiver pay for that to occur, that is, it'll be the staff provider's responsibility on getting that individual to those day services. So I want to say that change is maybe coming up December 1.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is December 1. They just heard about it literally last week, maybe Wednesday of last week, and everybody had until December 1
to figure this out. Thank you for the clarification. So it is the providers who are going to get hit, it sounds like, that
the
waiver is not
going to be. I think they're going to have to figure out how are we going to get folks to out to services and out to those day services. My understanding.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
That is a short window.
So with that, we'll move forward. I'll let you talk about all the exciting things going forward. I heard it does have a meeting, a community outreach on November 9th here in Nevada at Nevada City Hall at 5:30 on November 9th. I turn it over to you, Marty.
We have a lot of meetings here starting this week. We'll do 4 meetings throughout the county here in the next few weeks. Look forward to anybody attending. Just came out of a meeting this morning with the Nevada Rec Center program. You will see at next month's meeting, evening, where the city and the school respectively propose and start to move on a four-site combined project. I suspect it will be up and running by the summer, fall of 2019. Had a wonderful meeting this time last week. I wasn't here because we went down to a stepping up meeting in Des Moines at Heidi Hall in regards to jail diversion, and Carla was there. And I would have to say it was a full day worth of discussions in regards to what we're both doing right, what we need to do, and where we're failing miserably in our delivery of mental health in our nation. And it's a very sobering statistic display there. And it's just like, I can see why this is something that is, you could clearly make this out to be a crisis. That said, CICS, which is our region that we are in, is seen as throughout the state as by the metrics that are used to measure us is a success. So much so that we are having quiet conversations as being approached to additional memberships by other counties. Now, while that will be something that is nothing more than just quiet conversations amongst the supervisors, I don't know if there's anything to be acted upon, but people, when they're in the confederations that they are, don't have what they believe to be is a delivery of services to their satisfaction. They look for other partners. And we have been approached as a region on several fronts to consider additional applications. It's not even stay tuned. It's just so okay. You know that how are we doing? Our peers see us as a place where they'd like to be in confederation with. And other than that, it was a welcome to the end that what we're doing there on South Hazel is something that's seen as a win for the region, not just for Story County, and that it is nice that the region is giving voice small at this point to possibly helping us on the cost of conversion. So we're doing what we can. Okay. That said, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so move we adjourn.
So moved. Thank you, folks.
And happy Halloween. Okay.